Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. I'm Buck here in NYC with my main man Clay, and my oh my, do we have a lot for you. The back and forth between Governor DeSantis of Florida and President Biden and all the Democrats and all Biden's handlers and enablers and all the rest of it, throwing down over the COVID issue. It's almost like this is really political, and they don't care what the actual numbers are. We'll get into that. Plus, Representative Cori Bush wants to defund police while demanding that she continue her own private security detail. The McCloskeys in St. Louis, remember them during the BLM riots? They've been pardoned by the governor of Missouri, and some people are saying that that's not enough. They're going to go after them still. Plus, fallout from not just one Cuomo, but the bros Cuomo, the governor facing impeachment imminently. Plus, you have the other one. The bro Cuomo over at CNN, who is facing an ethics issue, but Jeff Zucker will probably catch his back. But let's first, Clay, start with how all of a sudden it's Texas and Florida's fault that there's this Delta variant situation, according to Joe Biden.
Florida and Texas account for one third of all new COVID-19 cases in the entire country. Just two states. Look, we need leadership from everyone. If some governors aren't willing to do the right thing to beat this pandemic, then they should allow businesses and universities who want to do the right thing to be able to do it. I say to these governors, please help. But you aren't going to help. At least get out of the way. The people are trying to do the right thing. Use your power to save lives.
You know what this is, Clay? This is the president of the United States, who runs the federal government, complaining about red states, or at least with Republican leadership right now, red states that are trying to protect the rights of people and end the COVID tyranny. Biden is saying, step aside so we can have the private sector do our dirty work. Step aside so the federal mandates will be easier to put through without states trying to block us.
Yeah, and not only this, remember, this goes back a ways, right? There has been a desire, I think, for Joe Biden to shift the blame for anything COVID related to anybody in a red state. Remember what happened when Texas opened up? He said it was Neanderthal thinking that the state of Texas would in any way be opening up. And there was all the discussion about all the craziness that was going to happen, all the virus that was going to spread. And Governor Greg Abbott opened up. And for the most part, what we are seeing is this new Delta variant has come in. But if the Delta variant didn't exist or hadn't made its way into the country, there was virtually no COVID left in the old variants, if you want to call them. And so this is Biden, who ran his entire campaign predicated on, I will keep you safe, who ran his entire campaign from the basement, now looking around and trying to figure out who he can blame because COVID has reared its ugly head again. Now, the data doesn't reflect that anybody should be panicked, but I think what Republicans are looking for is somebody who can fight back. And I actually think this plays really well for Abbott and DeSantis to be able to go head-to-head with Joe Biden, and that's what Governor DeSantis down in Florida just did.
Exactly right. Here he is, the governor of Florida, lighting up Biden on this one.
Joe Biden suggests that if you don't do lockdown policies, then you should, quote, get out of the way. But let me tell you this. If you're coming after the rights of parents in Florida, I'm standing in your way. I'm not going to let you get away with it. If you're trying to deny kids a proper in-person education, I'm going to stand in your way, and I'm going to stand up for the kids in Florida. If you're trying to restrict people, impose mandates, if you're trying to ruin their jobs and their livelihoods and their small business, if you are trying to lock people down, I am standing in your way, and I'm standing for the people of Florida. So why don't you do your job? Why don't you get this border secure? And until you do that, I don't want to hear a blip about COVID from you.
So he's got him nailed on the border issue, which is a total mess, as we've discussed here before, wide open. And it's wide open, Clay, notably because of specific decisions made by the Biden administration starting in January of this year, like ending the Remain in Mexico policy, the destruction of interior enforcement against illegal aliens all across the country. So that's been a choice that's been made. But don't you remember, Clay, when the states were asserting the rights back when Trump was in power. We're being told by places like New York, first of all, Cuomo was going to have his own vaccine testers. You remember this?
Yeah.
That you couldn't trust the vaccines, that there were going to be state authorities overriding the federal authorities. Now you have a federal government that's saying, oh, the states don't get to actually use quarantine powers or decide not to use them as they see fit. Top down federal tyranny. That's what it feels like.
Can you imagine if they decide, and we don't know how it's going to play out, to bring Joe Biden back because they're terrified about Kamala Harris having the lowest approval ratings of any vice president in most of our lives? Can you imagine Ron DeSantis against Joe Biden on a debate stage? I mean this honestly. I'm not sure that I can think of any matchup we've ever seen in a presidential election that would be more of a slaughter than DeSantis going head to head with Joe Biden, right? Biden left himself open for one haymaker after another. Trump was a mess in that first debate. Second debate, he clocked him. Imagine what DeSantis would be able to do with 82-year-old Joe Biden if they tried a weekend at Bernie's part two style, drag Joe Biden across the finish line again. I think there's nervousness in the White House because when they have these back and forths, DeSantis is destroying the logic underpinning any of the criticisms from Joe Biden, and he's doing it as the governor of Florida, not even really on an equal footing. This is a bad, bad, I think, calculus by Joe Biden to try to blame some of these Republican governors, because I think it blows up in his face.
Well, what's really happening here is the Democrats are trying to take the first step to the permanent COVID health security theater state. They're trying to keep this in a place now where it'll be here forever, because if you start to get mandates in enough places, if you start to have people that have set up, say, vaccine passports, LA's thinking about it. They already have LA,
I saw that story,
LA city
yes.
councilman thinking about it. New York is still on the line for it. The defense secretary, Lloyd Austin, is expected to make mandatory for all active duty military personnel, mandatory COVID vaccination, which then you have to ask, doesn't that have to be mandatory for all federal personnel too? And this is the incrementalism of the permanent COVID state. It's happening right now when we should be talking about how we get to full normalcy. Instead, they're trying to enshrine aspects of the apparatus of control and the bureaucracy that will linger forever, and more variants, another upsurge in the wintertime. It'll all be there already. You know, the whole system will be there in order to assert levers of control against us. That's what I see the Democrats doing right now. They're trying to do it while people are still concerned enough, the numbers are high enough that they can get away with some of it, because otherwise, What are we really even talking about with them at this point? Like, they're not going to actually get to zero COVID. They want to put this apparatus in place so that they can have a lot of control over our lives for a very long time to come.
And the larger context, I would say, is the variants aren't going to stop coming. And vaccination isn't going to end the variants, because, again, look at what's going on around the world. The percentage of vaccinations around the world are very low. Where did the Delta variant come from? India. Where are the future variants going to come from? Third world countries that have not been able to vaccinate their people. And there's always going to be a new variant of COVID. It would seem to me, for years and years, this is becoming, as we've talked about on the show, endemic and flu-like, in that this isn't going to be, at least not based on anything that I'm seeing so far from the vaccines, this isn't going to be polio that basically ceases to exist. This isn't going to be a measles or a mumps where it almost doesn't exist anywhere. This is going to be endemic. It's going to be like the flu. And there's always going to be, at least in the short term, until people start to act rationally and reasonably, and evidence out there of why you should be panicking, and the evidence of panic allows the continued capturing of freedom. And that's what we're seeing happen right now, is all over the country, this expansion, which we had hoped was going to start to diminish with the vaccines, it hasn't, freedom continuing to be gobbled up.
DeSantis spoke about how, by having an open border, to your point, Clay, about the variants and how there'll be continuations of iterations of variants, right? That's what's going to end up happening. And let's also not forget that Fauci said just yesterday we could be heading for vaccine-resistant COVID this fall. That so essentially saying even you know, we might get to a place where variants completely evade the vaccines, which is fascinating. Almost like what happens sometimes with the flu, but that's a whole other conversation we'll get into, which we have not been able to conquer and eliminate entirely. But here's Governor DeSantis saying we're just bringing it all in.
He's bringing in people from over 100 different countries across the southern border. Every variant on this planet, some we don't even know about, are absolutely coming into our country that way. And what they're doing is people are coming and then they're farming them out all over the United States, putting them on buses, putting them on planes. And so when he's lecturing people about imposing COVID restrictions and lockdown policies on the one hand, and yet not only doing nothing to stop the border surge, but actually facilitating it on the other hand, he just loses all credibility when it comes to COVID.
If you want to fly into the U.S. from the U.K., Clay, and the Democrats get their way, it's going to be mandatory vaccination. There's going to be a whole bureaucracy around it. If you just walk across the U.S.-Mexico border and read off the little sheet of paper that the cartels give you to say, I want to claim asylum in your country, you get released. You get let go.
Not only that, if you go to Mexico on vacation, you have to have a negative test to come back from Mexico. I did that in February. But if I had been, and I'm a citizen, obviously, if I had been walking across the border, it wouldn't have been an issue at all. And DeSantis is right that there is a strong argument that can be tied together. And I think it's a really potent one for the Republican Party to tie border insecurity to COVID variant spreads, because they're going to be coming from somewhere outside of this country by and large, and that's where the danger comes from. So are you going to secure the border or not? It's a tough response for the Biden White House, I think, there, given the failures they have at the border right now.
We've got Representative Elise Stefanik joining us in just a few minutes to talk about, is Cuomo the governor, not the news anchor, although that could happen too, is Cuomo toast? Is it all over for him? We'll get into that. Plus, this story about defund the police from somebody who wants her own private security detail in Congress. Not a big shock, but hypocrisy that we will expose. But let's talk about cancel culture for a second. We all know it exists on social media sites, and we want to do something about it. You know that the left wants to silence and boycott any voices like mine, like Clay's, that they don't agree with. It happens to us already. Twitter and Facebook promise to be open platforms, but they're not. So how about canceling their access to your data instead and create some security and privacy for yourself online in the process? You need a VPN, a virtual private network, to do this. And I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address when you're online, making it much harder to trace everything you're doing and sell it to advertisers. Clay, when you use this, you anonymize so much of your online presence that it really slows down big tech's ability to be the big surveillance machine.
No doubt. It's also incredibly easy to set up. You tap one button on your phone or computer, you're protected. It also encrypts 100% of your data to protect you from hackers and internet bad guys, which is why it's finally time to say no to censorship and take back your online privacy at expressvpn.com/Clay and Buck. By visiting my special link, you'll get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN service for free. Again, that's expressvpn.com/Clay and Buck, expressvpn.com/Clay and Buck, to protect your data today.
Wow, there's nobody better. Listen to that oratory. Listen to that articulation. Listen to the intelligence just overflowing with cranial cavity.
Passing the torch of wisdom, even to this very day. Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. We are rolling through the Thursday edition of the program. Hope all of you are having a fantastic time. We have got an absolutely loaded show for you as we roll through here from New York City. We have got much to discuss, but some of the hypocrisy on defund the police. There's still lots of people out there in the Democratic Party who want to pretend that they never called for defunding the police. A lot of them have backed away from it. But one who is still making illogical, absurd, and ridiculous arguments is Cori Bush. And you may remember Cori Bush as We talked about her a decent amount on the show around July 4th when she basically said America was an awful, racist country and everybody should feel awful to be from here on July 4th of all days. She's obviously also been camping out on the steps of the Capitol, arguing that Joe Biden should violate the Constitution and reimpose the moratorium as it pertains to evictions. But she also can't even talk for 25 seconds without pointing out that while she's still in favor of defunding the police, she's also going to make sure that she has her own personal security.
Oh, well, we'll get to that in a second, Clay, because we're having a little issue with running that.
Lori Bush,
she says, look, this is not new.
This is the story, right?
You had a candidate for mayor in New York who was Maya Wiley, the biggest defund police advocate here in a city that's had a huge spike in violence and shootings and homicides. And then you find out that she pays, not only does she live in like a $3 million house,
right,
pretty nice house, she also pays, and so you just know it's in a safe neighborhood to begin with. She pays for private security to patrol her neighborhood. And this is the same thing with Cori Bush, and I always want to know as well, so does the taxpayer pick up the bill for a member of Congress to have, I mean, how does that work exactly? I mean, I've got some friends who have been looking into this, and it's classic. It's the Bloomberg idea as well. When he was Bloomberg was mayor of New York, of course, he had an NYPD security detail. But later on, he's so anti-gun. And then you find out that all these really rich left wingers, they always have armed security for themselves when they think it's necessary, while they're telling everybody else, you can't own guns to defend yourself, and we can't have enough police to keep your neighborhood safe either. This is virtue signaling that costs lives. We should all remember that. That's what actually happens. And people that push this stuff are betraying the very minority communities that they stand up on their soapbox pretending to care so much about.
Well, and to be fair, at least Cori Bush, unlike everybody else who called for defunding the police, is sticking to defunding the police, which has to be driving the Democratic Party all around her mad, because she is one of the loony bin members of the looniest members of the left. And so everything that she's advocating for is effectively an incredible weight on any chance, I really do believe this, of the Democratic Party being able to retain their majority, of Nancy Pelosi retaining the House speakership, because of things like this, which cut through not only, to your point, Buck, not only do Republicans kind of roll their eyes and say this is an unbelievable level of hypocrisy, but also even Democrats and independents. And let's listen to Cori Bush here, as she can't even consistently point out the defund the police argument.
Spending $200,000.
Nope, I think we just lost it. So, Clay, instead, tell them about one of our wonderful sponsors. We'll come back to Elise Stefanik joining us here in a minute, as well as
the latest on the Cuomo mess, right? And
yes,
we'll
sir.
Continue to set the odds. We were talking yesterday about the odds that he survives. He's not going to resign, but the impeachment proceedings are underway. And let me tell you, if you're with AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, you're paying too much for your cell service. That's why Pure Talk, exact same network, exact same towers, one of the big carriers, but you're going to save a heck of a lot of money. In fact, the average family can save $800 a year, and switching is easy. My own son, my 13-year-old, got his first phone. He's got a Pure Talk phone. It's an iPhone 12, and he's got unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. You and your family can do the same. All you have to do, pull out your cell phone right now, listen to me, dial #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250, say Pure Talk, and you'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. Again, save your family money today. Pull out your phones, #250, Pure Talk.
Listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. This is Buck here with Clay in NYC. And just a reminder, we got Dinesh D'Souza at the top of the next hour joining us, as well as Alex Berenson in the third hour to talk about all the COVID madness. But we're on Cuomo watch right now, and we have somebody who can weigh in on this with some real insider knowledge and expertise. We've got Congresswoman Elise Stefanik with us now, representing the great state, or a district in the great state of New York. Congresswoman, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you.
So, is Cuomo definitely getting impeached, and is he going to be removed from office, in your opinion, as a result of that process?
I believe that we've finally reached a tipping point, and finally state Democrats are going to move towards impeachment. They have still said they're going to delay this until next Friday to start the Judiciary Committee process in the state legislature. But remember, this has been months for the Democrats in Albany who have slow walked this and really put their heads in the sand. But there is not a single elected official in Albany who has stuck their neck out to protect Governor Cuomo. That's a sea change. That's very different than where we were a week or 2 weeks ago. And if you read the Attorney General's report, it is just unbelievable. It makes your skin crawl, especially one of the cases of his sexual assault and sexual harassment of a New York State trooper that was assigned to his protective service. That had not been in the press before, so that was a bombshell report. So I do believe that he will be impeached. And if the state legislature Democrats fail to, they need to be held accountable by the voters across New York.
Congresswoman, if he is impeached and removed from office, could he come back and try to run again in 2022 to reclaim the office that he has now? Where obviously we talk a lot about impeachment on the national level as it pertains to Congress and the president. But how does it work in the state of New York in terms of Cuomo's viability going forward?
You know, I really don't see him running again if he is impeached. I have to look technically at what the rules are in New York State. Again, I'm a federal official and I'm very familiar with the impeachment proceedings.
Yeah, no kidding.
Having lived through two impeachment proceedings that were illegal and unconstitutional at the federal level. But my assumption is that if he is impeached, that will be the end of his time in politics. Certainly, he, I think, would be unable to win a Democratic primary if we were even going to run again. He was trying to run again. You saw earlier this year, despite the multiple scandals, he was hosting fundraisers. Shame on those donors for supporting Governor Cuomo. But I don't see him being on the ballot next November.
Could I just ask, Congresswoman, if he's going to fight this out till the very end, because he knows the process, he knows New York State politics as well as anybody, a lot of favors owed to him, probably knows a lot of things about people that he might be able to use as leverage on them, behind closed doors at least. What are the ways that you could see this getting derailed? I mean, is delay essentially the greatest ally that Cuomo would have in staying in office and surviving this current moment of revolt against him, even from Democrats?
I think delay is something that every New Yorker should be concerned about. Remember, virtually every elected official had called for his resignation months ago, yet they failed to act in the state assembly and state senate. So they have been slow walking this. That was before the report. You bring up a really important point. Cuomo's entire reign in New York is known for political vindictiveness, for leaking materials, sometimes true, sometimes not true, against his political opponents. You saw even in the Attorney General's report, the retaliation, which is illegal in the state of New York, against some of the victims. They leaked personnel files and shopped them around to the media. So I would not put anything past him. He is a political vindictive bully. And even I've experienced that. I have been one of the strongest Cuomo critics during my time in office. And I was vilified for the press for simply calling him the worst governor in America. And it turns out that was a very true statement. And everyone across America understands that to be the case right now. But I think time is something we have to watch, but also the political vindictiveness that he is and his team are known for. And you've seen it in some of the articles in the New York Post, the Washington Post today, about his senior aides. Their job has only been to protect Governor Cuomo, and they have smeared victim after victim. They smeared the families who lost their loved ones in nursing homes, and they've smeared their political opponents.
Congresswoman, does it surprise you, even if Cuomo is getting some of what he deserves because of this sexual harassment investigation, that simultaneously the fact that he may well have caused thousands of additional deaths with the way that he responded to COVID, nursing homes in particular, and the Department of Justice basically has stepped away from that investigation, shouldn't he have to answer for that as well for people in New York?
Absolutely, and we are going to continue holding the Department of Justice accountable for that decision of closing up that investigation. Again, New York State lost over 15,000 vulnerable seniors. I've talked to family members and loved ones of seniors who were lost in nursing homes in my district. And regardless of whether or not Governor Cuomo stays into office, we need justice, transparency, and accountability for those families. And most importantly, we need to make sure that we have policy protection so that never happens again in future public health crises. These were truly our most vulnerable people that Governor Cuomo essentially sent to their death, defying and breaking federal guidance from CMS. He forced nursing homes to take positive COVID patients without their ability to isolate them. Meanwhile, he had empty bed space in the Javits naval ship that was sent by President Trump at the time. And what's really stunning is, yes, the media is very focused on the sexual assault, sexual harassment. The media has not been as focused on the nursing home scandal of late. And how they covered Governor Cuomo at the beginning of COVID is just shameful. The fact that he won an Emmy, the fact that they were lifting him up, praising him as the most effective governor in the nation, it just shows how out of touch and disingenuous the mainstream media is. And they should have accountability in this, too. So much of Governor Cuomo's actions, bullying, retaliation, criminal conduct, has been done in plain sight for years.
What happens if, in fact, he is removed? Do you think that that has reverberations in the Democrat Party statewide in New York that could result in some changes in policy? And also, could a Republican, you think, take that seat if, in fact, Cuomo goes?
I think a Republican can win statewide and win the governor's seat, regardless if it's Cuomo or someone replacing Cuomo, because the New York Democratic Party has protected Cuomo. They have put failed policies into place. You see crime skyrocketing. We're one of the least friendly states when it comes to businesses. We have some of the highest taxes in the nation. Corruption is unfortunately king in Albany and has been for years. What happens technically, and New Yorkers know this because this is not the first governor that we've had to either resign. It is the first one in my lifetime that will be impeached, though, is the lieutenant governor. That's Kathy Hochul. She will step into that job. I anticipate the Democrats will have a very, very contested primary for who will be the gubernatorial nominee. And who knows, we may end up with a very far left socialist candidate who could be the Democratic nominee. And Republicans have a great opportunity to win statewide, I believe, just because of the overall frustration with the failed far left policies.
Representative Elise Stefanik, thank you so much for joining us here on the Clay and Buck Show. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Listen up, everybody. If you own a home, you better have Home Title Lock. FBI calls title fraud one of the fastest growing crimes, which is why both of us trust Home Title Lock to protect our homes. They're stored in the cloud, the title documents are. That's where the cyber thief can find it. Forge your signature, state you sold your home. The nightmare starts with collection calls, demanding payment you never took out. Then some lender you never heard of serves you an eviction notice and takes you to court. Buck, you got to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, you can pray that your insurance or common identity theft services are going to cover you, but guess what? They really don't. And now you're spending a fortune to try to get your home back. I mean, the actual legal ownership of your home restored into your hands. Once you see what a quit claim deed looks like, how you can just print this off, get it off the internet, and how easy the forgery can be, you know that this is a crime that you could suffer from too. For pennies a day, Home Title Lock secures your home's title and backs it with $1 million guarantee. $1 million guarantee. Register your address now to see if you're already a victim. That can happen to people. You'll get 30 free days of protection right now when you call this number, 800-708-LOCK. That's 800-708-LOCK. 800-708-LOCK. See website for guarantee details.
What happens when you cross a lawyer with an ex-CIA officer? The Clay, Travis, and Buck Sexton Show on the EIB Network.
Welcome back in, Clay, Travis, Buck Sexton. We are rolling through the Thursday edition of the program. Got a lot to get to, but Buck, have you been worried anymore? Like, are you losing sleep over the idea of the vaccine passports all over New York?
I keep hoping that there's going to be some kind of massive protest out in the streets of New York City about this, but so far, it looks like they're telling restaurant owners and bar owners, everybody else, get ready to have your vaccine passport bouncers at the door. This is what we're heading for. And by the way, if it gets rolled out of New York City, it's much more likely, I think, to be rolled out in other places as well. So the time to stop it is right now.
The reason why I bring that up, too, I want to play a clip here in a moment, but I don't believe that there's any way that this is constitutional, right? We really don't have a massive amount of history here as it comes to pandemics and what authorities, mayors have and governors have and everybody else. But over a year after this emergency began and our pandemic response lost its mind, it seems to me that one of the fallouts has been people now just make choices that they know are unconstitutional and dare judges to stop them, right? I mean, that is what is going on right now with the eviction moratorium. And let's hear what Jen Psaki, we played this yesterday and discussed it, because Biden basically said, hey, I've talked to all the constitutional scholars. They say I can't do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. And now Jen Psaki is trying to clean up the mess one more time that Joe Biden made. Here's what she had to say about Biden's power when it comes to eviction moratorium.
Well, the president would not have supported moving forward with any action where he didn't feel there was legal standing and legal support. We obviously don't control what the courts do. And we have, of course, seen what the Supreme Court decided and how they ruled, which was not related to public health, as you well know, Kelly, and was related to the relationship between the landlord and the renter. But this is different in that it is more targeted. It is focused on counties with higher substantial case rates to protect renters, and CDC ultimately decided to adopt it.
That is simply idiotic babble. The decision that came down, which was 5-4, thanks to Kavanaugh deciding that it would be better to allow the unconstitutional action to continue because the CDC had already said it was going to end. Well, now they're just coming up with a new order. So it was okay, we'll let this go because it's going away anyway, and it will work out better for everybody. This was the Kavanaugh logic to go along with the four crazy libs who, of course, just feel like socialism by fiat is a good thing. So they were on board for it. But now we're finding out, oh, it turns out that they'll just keep doing this. So, Clay, this is even worse than what we've seen in the past, because at least before, when Obama did something that he said he knew was unconstitutional, it hadn't necessarily already been tested in the court. This is the Democrat Party with Joe Biden at the head of it saying straight up, the Supreme Court says I can't do this, so I'm just going to do a version of it again and wait for them to try to do something about it. And by the time they get to it, it'll be too late. That's tyranny.
There's no doubt about that. It's also allowing, and this is big picture analysis here, it's allowing the CDC to effectively override property ownership. And this is significant because it's easy in this sort of world we live in now where there's constant demagoguery as it pertains to rich and poor and different identities. But we talked about this yesterday, and I think it's significant. A huge percentage of people who are landlords are not super wealthy. In fact, they have lived their entire lives to put themselves in a position. There's a great story that I was referencing yesterday about a guy from Versailles, Kentucky. For people who don't know Versailles, Kentucky, it's an area up around Lexington. And he owned a apartment complex, and he did all the repairs there. And he had managed it for years and years, and he paid himself $75,000 a year. And suddenly, with this new situation that's going on, not only with the eviction moratorium, but Buck, with the capital gains taxes, if he decides to sell this property, he was planning on retiring and living off of it, he's going to have to go potentially. We'll see what's going to happen with the budget. But right now, Joe Biden has talked about the capital gains tax going from 20% effectively to 43%, a doubling on in terms of how that's going to impact people just based on timing. They're trying to make it retroactive. All of this is while the economy is still trying to recover from the deep freeze that we put it in over COVID. We can't allow these agencies to be stealing away property rights. It's unconstitutional, and it's shameful, frankly, that Joe Biden knows it's unconstitutional, and politically he feels like he has to do it no matter what.
Well, let's just think about it. What's the limiting principle here for the CDC right now? Essentially, what the federal government under the Biden administration is saying is, we think it's better if people don't have to leave the home they're currently in because of the pandemic. So we're just going to seize property, in a sense. You're going to take assets, take money from people. I mean, this is a form of really thuggish Marxism at its core. And we're going to do this. And by the way, I understand the Trump administration also went along with this early on, but it had not yet been tested in the court. It was earlier in what felt like a true emergency. It was a different set of circumstances, but most notably, the court had not ruled yet. That is a different thing. We are crossing a Rubicon here where the court, the Supreme Court, can rule and the executive branch can say, yeah, but we really like this. And if there's no limiting principle, what can't they do? Why can't the CDC just tell everybody that, you know what, you're going to have to just give your home to the people who are currently in it, because we really can't have the kind of social distancing we need if people are going to be out there looking for homes to move into. I mean, why not? They can say whatever they want, apparently. That's the Biden administration approach.
They're going to try to argue that they're narrowly tailoring this rule so that it isn't implicated by the previous rulings, but I think they're going to fail in a big way. And by the way, Val in Buffalo, really quick here, wants to talk about this in particular. Val, what you got for us?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You guys are great. Yeah, Val from New York, Long Island. What it is that with the extension of the moratorium, I, like perhaps 23 million other Americans, you know, we're like in this boat where I had a tenant who, you know, was paying his rent and everything. And then I let them stay an extra year because I want to just sell my house. And then because of COVID, they lost their jobs and they're just kind of hanging in there. And I can't even evict them. And the goalposts get moved from like September to December to January to May. And now they're being moved again. And I can't even take any action on
that. Do you have to pay the mortgage, Val? You have to keep paying the bank, don't you?
Right. I mean, I'm paying the utilities, I'm paying the taxes and everything. And I just want to sell the house and retire, and I can't take any action.
There's no doubt. I mean, he is being held hostage by the existing policies that the CDC has put in place, directly contravening his ability to own his property and make money off of it as he sees fit. And this is a flagrantly unconstitutional action that Joe Biden has undertaken, even though there's no legal basis, as he himself said yesterday.
Wait, but Clay, I thought Biden was going to protect us from the crazy Marxists in the Democrat Party. I thought that was the promise Oh, no, we knew that was all a big lie, and now we're seeing it play out before us. We'll dive into this and more, including the January 6th madness with Dinesh D'Souza, coming up next.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.